session number 21552, row 1.
Raymond Venables, Reel 1. Can you tell me where and when you were born, please?
I was born on June the 2nd, 1920, in Peterborough, which was then in Northamptonshire.
And what did your father do for a living?
He was worked for an engineering firm.
And what was Peterborough like?
Peterborough was a cathedral town, a lovely cathedral, which had become a railway town, so that it was a mixture of the cathedral close and a workaday working town.
And what type of a house did you live in?
I lived in a ordinary sort of semi-detached four-bedroomed house.
Did you have any brothers and sisters?
Yes, I had two big brothers. I was the baby of three.
How much older were they then?
We were 2 years apart and always got on very well, because probably we were rather different.
And what about your education? Where were you educated?
I went to school in a grammar school in Peterborough, and then I went to University of Leicester, which was a tiny university in those days, and it's there that I met my wife, because we were fellow students.
Can I take you back with your first part of education? Where were you educated in Peterborough?
At Deacon School, Peterborough, which was a grammar school.
And what was the grammar school like in...
It was, in those days, it was a fairly academic one. Quite a lot of the people went to the university from there.
Did you play any sport?
Yes, all of them. It was the chief interest of my young life. I played rugby, hockey, cricket, and rather badly tennis.
What was your favourite?
Rugby.
What position did you play?
Back row forward or prop forward. In those days, they didn't specialise as they do now. You were a forward.
And you played rugby for the school?
Yes.
Who did you play against?
Other schools and some other clubs.
How did your team do?
We did all right. It was quite a good... The sport was quite good.
Was it encouraging the school to play?
Yes, it was, yes.
And academically, did you have particular favourite subjects academically?
Well, I did. I went on to university to read modern languages, so I enjoyed modern languages at school.
Which languages did you speak?
I did French and German.
Did that in those days, did you have any trips to France or Germany?
I did do one, far fewer, but I did do one. We went to Paris with a school trip once, but they were far fewer than they are now.
What was the trip like?
It was fun. The French teacher's son was a particular friend of mine, so we were all together.
Did it improve your language?
I don't know that trip did particularly, but...
Did you do much sightseeing when you...
Yes, we did some sightseeing when we were there, yeah.
So you went on from the grammar school to university in Leicester?
Yes.
What year would that be?
That was 1938.
At that time, had you any anticipation of the situation in Europe leading to war?
Total, yes. We grew up feeling that it was inevitable.
Had your father had any military service in
the war? No, he wasn't in it, but my uncles were.
Did they tell you stories of...
Yes, the usual... for horror stories, so that when the war started you assumed that you would go to war and that you would go over the top and die quite soon before it started. That's how you thought.
Had your uncle served in the Navy or the Army?
Not particularly. I've often wondered. I think I probably went to the Navy, because if you went to the Air Force at that point, they offered you a job as a rear gunner, which I didn't fancy, and the Army had come out of Dunkirk, and you didn't see how it could ever get into battle again at that point. So I went to the Navy originally as the least of three evils.
So in 1938, you'd actually gone to Leicester University.
Mm-hmm.
What was the university like at that time?
It was tiny and very friendly, and there were some very nice girls. And it was very unimportant in the role compared with other universities. They actually did London University degrees externally. They didn't do their own degrees in those days. Since, of course, it's turned into a full belt university.
What type of academic areas did they specialise in at Leicester?
Well, I was going to do an honours degree in French with subsidiary German, but I didn't have time before I was called up, so that I rapidly did a general degree in French, German and English, and then went into the Navy and went back to university after the war to finish off, but I went back to Cambridge and not to Leicester.
Did you have any plans at that time when you first went to university to use languages?
Not very much. It was all pretty academic and out of books.
So in 1938, had you any memories of, say, the Munich crisis?
Very much so, yes. We were a very political generation. I mean, sort of relatively clever boys in the sixth forms of grammar schools were very interested in all this. We used to talk about it and debate it, and very much so, yes.
When you were debating that sort of thing, would there be different viewpoints? Would people take a different stand? Would there be, obviously, people taking the left-wing stand or the right-wing?
Yes, very much so. And we were all pretty left. In my school anyway, and I think our generation was. It was also, we debated a great deal about pacifism. Don't forget, it was about then that the Oxford Union had its debate about it, and I was by no means convinced that I wouldn't be a pacifist.
Was there any reason for that?
Well, I mean, the excellent reason, because there's a very good case for it, by any standards, but particularly the Christian case. And it was a common sort of conversation we had with each other in those days.
Had you followed events like the Spanish Civil War as well?
Yes.
What was the general feeling towards, say, the growth of fascism then?
Well, it was the typical left-wing one. I mean, we were very much in favour of one side and against Franco. I never lost that feeling. I never went to Spain till Franco disappeared.
And what about Hitler and Mussolini? Was there any particular...
Well, horror, Hitler, was an event. A friend of mine who lived just down the road, he asked us round one day to meet a journalist, I think on the Daily Express. And he told us about the Kristallnacht, in you know, when they started overtly bashing up the Jews. And that had a considerable effect on me and my generation. I mean, if you're allowed to have personal as distinct from national war aims, I mean, I went to war against someone who persecuted Jews.
And where would you get most of the information from? You mentioned meeting a journalist. Would you get information from newspapers?
Yes, newspapers and the radio. We were, with no telly, we were huge listeners to the radio, if you can imagine.
How were events reported then on the continent, on the radio, before the Second World War?
Well, I don't know, just straight. I mean, I think you if you wanted to, you could get a good impression of what was going on.
So you were at university, you'd gone to university and you were pursuing your career. Did anything happen particularly while you were at university?
I fell in love. the most important thing that happened. The war was on, you see, when I first went there in my second year, but it was a phony war. And, you know, I perhaps ought to tell you that I was longing to drop it all and go and fight, but it wouldn't be true. What I wanted to do was to finish off some sort of study before I went. So I actually went to a board of local citizens and said, look, I don't think they want me until so-and-so, but I certainly don't want to be called up now because I want to finish this degree. So I actually postponed my going into the Navy, though I don't think I would have gone then any earlier anyway.
While you were at university in your second year, war was declared. Do you actually remember the declaration of war, listening to it?
Yes, I do. Because I was on holiday, on camping with some friends on the east coast. And as soon as war was declared, we actually went home and started looking up in the sky for aircraft and assuming that we should be bombed any moment now. But the other thing that we were brought up on was that the bomber will always get through, was what they said, and we all thought that there wasn't very much future.
And was your reaction, obviously you mentioned that you'd toyed with the idea of pacifism. What was your initial reaction on hearing that war had been declared?
Well, by then I'd come to the conclusion that although I think the Christian case for pacifism is incontrovertible, I wasn't a good enough Christian to go on with it. And it was Hitler and his racial policies which I couldn't do with.
Was that feeling a general feeling? You mentioned it among some of your peers. What was the general feeling amongst the population?
Well, I don't know, because there was a great deal of anti-Semitism in the population, and I don't think that this feeling that I and some of my friends had was certainly was not present in the government of the day. But there it is. I think people are allowed to have their own personal war aims.
You mentioned there was some anti-Semitism. Had you witnessed any incidents in the 1930s?
No. Not in the school I was at, one simply was, or at the university. I mean, we were only saying the other day we had both had a friend we much liked there who was a Jew, and it only occurs to us now that he was one. But there were obviously areas in Britain when there was a great deal of very nasty anti-Semitism.
Would you say that the atmosphere in Britain at the time was one of little knowledge about Hitler? You mentioned that obviously you were, but I mean, again, the general population. Would you say that people had a little idea of what the regime was like?
I think some wanted to close their eyes to it, but the news was there. I mean, I can remember particularly, I mean, when he reoccupied the Rhineland, for example. I mean, there was no doubt, whatever, that I don't forget when Mein Kampf appeared in England, but if people wanted to know, they could know. It's also true that, I mean, it's even true in Germany. We've got German friends who, of course, a lot of Germans said they didn't know what was going on, but some of our German friends who were young girls at the time said, well, we knew perfectly well because, for one thing, we're Catholics, and the Catholic preachers often told us what was going on.
So you were at university in the phony war period.
Yeah.
Do you remember anything of the restrictions that were imposed on the outbreak of war?
Not particularly. There was one restriction, if you like, which was comic, was when we were walking across a golf links rather amorously, and we were suddenly greeted by a man carrying a rifle who was told us not to disappear because this was a dangerous area. What did we call them? Parachots, they were called, yeah. So we all called it the incident of the purple-faced parachot. He was very funny. But no, on the whole, we just behaved as we always did. I mean, we didn't cut down the matches we played or anything, as far as I can remember. There were very few problems over travelling. It was as if there wasn't a war on, except that you knew there was, and one of these days you were going to go to it.
Because I was wondering that, was there anticipation that at some stage it would start in a big way?
Yes, I suppose it did. I don't think you really thought that the non-bombing would go on forever. And it did start when I was still there, because when I did my final exams in London, and, there was air raid on while I took the exams. I mean, I walked along to the examination hall and you could see the vapour trails up in the sky. It meant that I did rather well in the exam, I think, because I thought, well, to hell with this. This isn't very significant. But I certainly didn't suffer from exam nerves.
Were there any civil defence kind of precautions at the university?
I suppose there were. We had gas masks, I think.
Blackout.
And we had the blackout, yes. Yes, we had the blackout. I can remember going... odd memory, but I can remember going in the bus, and the bus had its windows blacked out, and it was all rather sick-making. So if you went down to the cinema in the town in a bus, I always felt rather sick.
You've been issued with gas masks at that time.
Yeah.
Did you have to carry the gas mask with you at all times?
I don't think so. I can't really remember.
So we're in that period in the Phoney War. Have you any? Because I believe the winter of 1939-1940 was quite cold. Have you any memories of that?
Yes. I have more memories of the beginning of 41, because that was even colder. But I don't particularly remember the coldness of 1940.
And as we went into 1940, obviously there was Dunkirk. What was the general feeling amongst the students at that period about the Dunkirk?
Well, of horror, but also relief that so many made it back. The thing that really shook me and made me realise really that there was a war on and I was going to have to go was the fall of France. That was I can remember walking around the college and thinking, well, that's it. That's terrible.
Obviously, with Dunkirk, then, had you felt that that wasn't necessarily the end of the campaign in France and that it would continue?
No, I didn't know. I don't think any of us thought that was the end. Although it's also perfectly true that you couldn't see actually how the war could ever end. I mean, I think that was one reason why I wasn't in any particular hurry to get in, because any idea that it could be finished quickly was absolute nonsense. Without the Americans in the war, and without the Russians in the war, of course, we couldn't have won it. And they weren't at that time. So, honestly, one looked at it and thought, this war, in the beginning, when I was first in the war, I thought, this must go on forever. And it was a sort of surprise, unlike the stories you hear about other wars where they said it'd be over by Christmas. We almost went to the other extreme at certain points and thought this will never end.
And what was public morale like during that summer?
Well, it was sort of stoical. It was not like I've heard stories of the First World War. you know, rejoicing at going to war. There was none of that. I didn't know anybody who... there were a few people who, I think, felt that they lived rather unenterprising lives and they found an opportunity to distinguish themselves. I had a cousin who was perhaps rather a dull chap, but he shot down 2 Messerschmitts in 90 seconds. Well, that's something. But for the most part, there was absolutely no enthusiasm for going and killing other people. But there was a sort of dull feeling that you were not going to let those people march down your streets. Yes, there was that.
And obviously at that time, Winston Churchill had become Prime Minister. Mm. Was there any effect on morale of his taking over?
Yes. I mean, he was... You all felt he was the right bloke for the job. And, you know, his speeches still ring in my ears all these years later. There's no doubt about it. We're all for him.
So you... When did you set your final exams then?
In November 1940.
And you said you went down to London.
I took the exams in London, and I got the results in early December. And 3 weeks later, I was in a ship. It was pretty quick.
You said you'd had your call up to the Navy deferred slightly, so you could.
You were called up in batches on certain dates, and they suddenly changed the date, which meant they were not going to call me up, which gave me time to take an exam. And it is likely, almost certain, they wouldn't have called me up until after the exam. But to be sure, I went in front of this tribunal of people who really rather dealt me as if I was some sort of shirker. I didn't approve of them. They didn't approve of me. But that was the thing. I don't think, in practice, I did defer my joining the Navy. But I just wanted to be sure so I could take this exam.
Who was the tribunal made up of?
Local citizens. Worthy citizens.
Did they have any other kind of function? Other than
I don't know. I mean, they were people. They were honest men, I've no doubt. But I remember... Of all, they said, what subject are you taking? And I said, well, art subject. They said, well, what art subject? I said, French, German and English. And they said, looked at each other, I wouldn't call those art subjects, would you? And I thought, well, I do. Most educated people do. But anyway, it was all right, because they granted me my extension, if there was to be one.
And how were you called up to the Navy? Can you take me through the process of how you first heard?
The comic thing is, I can't really remember. They called up people on a certain date, and I remember that the time before that, I was expected to be called up, but they put the date back a bit, forward a bit, so I didn't quite fall into it. And it was at that point that I thought, by gosh, I could... If I work hard, I can take that exam. But apart from that, apart from going off for a medical and having the usual problem about producing a specimen in a bottle, I can't, and then you get a notice that, you know, I must join the 12 o'clock train from Paddington on platform 1 on, December the 31st, 1940. So I joined on the 1st of 1941, 1st of January.
The medical, what that you mentioned the specimen, was it a very rigorous medical?
No, it wasn't rigorous. No. There was a thing where they was a slight worry because they tested you for colour blindness, which is important in the Navy, so you can tell port from starboard. And I remember thinking, oh dear, I don't want to be a stoker, because if you failed that, you were a stoker or something. And so I can remember trying to peer at the thing beforehand so I would get it right, but it was also the problem. I wasn't colourblind.
So you, where were you called up to?
I went to, for my medical, I went to Cambridge, which was the local centre for it. And then when I actually joined, I went down to Devonport, HMS Raleigh, it was called.
And what kind of reception did you receive on arrival?
Well, I remember that well. You travelled all night in the train. We arrived on the station, Plymouth, got out the early hours of the morning, and there were some good ladies on the platform with lots of coffee and tea and cocoa and buns, who were all being very sweet and friendly. And the first chap I met, I said, "Don't I know your face?" "Well, you might have done, because he'd made quite a lot of films, and he was an actor." And so I chatted to him, and then you got in a lorry and went bumping along and found yourself in this place at Tor Point, near Devonport, which is still a great big naval place.
Who was the actor? Who was the actor?
I've just forgotten his name. Peter Ball, I think. He was quite a good actor, and I saw him afterwards. He appeared in a play, and I went round the back to say hello to him. There were quite a lot of actors. Michael Redgrave went through just before me. Alec Guinness was also in the Navy before my time, and I did actually was in contact with him afterwards, because he said something in his autobiography, and I wrote to him and said, "I knew that chap too."
So you'd arrived at Tor Point?
Yes.
What accommodation were you placed in?
Well, great big sheds with triple, double bunks, and no privacy at all, and all the rest of it.
How did you take to that?
What amazes me in retrospect is how easily you took to it. I mean, I think it's because, you know, you've always known, you expected to go to war. And anyway, you grew up knowing that if you lived in England, that from time to time things happened and English people went off to war. And what amazes me in retrospect is how casually I took it. And a lot of other people did too.
What about your fellow recruits? Where were they from?
They were a hugely mixed bunch. There were some from... There were quite a lot that surprised me, because they were from, say, the Gorballs in Glasgow, and they did seem... They were smaller. They were shorter. There were some remarkable people. There were some toffs as well. I mean, they were all mixed in together. And that was what was good about it. Interesting.
And what was your rank at that time as you joined as a recruit?
Well, I was the most ordinary of ordinary seamen. Hostilities only, ordinary seamen. Except that because I got a university degree, you know, you were also a CW candidate, commission warrant candidate. So it was there, but you didn't tell anybody, by heaven above, but... You were thought of as a possible, because you got a university degree.